My friends, now we move on to the last segment of our program today, which is Sutta studies. The sutta that we have chosen for today is Ukka Sutta. The sutta is from the Anguttara Nikaya and translated by the Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi. I will read the sutta, and if you like, you can read along with me. Then Ukka, the government minister, went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side, and said to him, "It's incredible, sir, it's amazing. Migara of Rohana is so rich, so very wealthy. But Ukka, how rich is he? He has 100,000 gold coins, not to mention the silver. Well, Ukka, that is wealth. I can't deny it. But fire, water, rulers, thieves, and unloved heirs all take a share of that wealth. There are these seven kinds of wealth that they can't take a share of. What seven? The wealth of faith, ethical conduct, conscience, prudence, learning, generosity, and wisdom. There are these seven kinds of wealth that fire, water, rulers, thieves, and unloved heirs can't take a share of. Faith and ethical conducts are kinds of wealth, as are conscience and prudence. Learning and generosity and wisdom is a seventh kind of wealth. When a woman or man has these kinds of wealth, they are really rich in the world, invisible among gods and humans. So let the wise devote themselves to faith, ethical behavior, confidence, and insight into the teaching, remembering the instruction of the Buddha." Now we invite Bandi for the exposition of the sutta. Bandi, please.
Friends, the Ukka Sutta is concentrated on and around seven treasures. These are the faith, moral conduct, moral shame, moral fear, learning, generosity, and wisdom. Buddha recognized these seven as seven treasures, and he encouraged his lay followers specifically to have these seven types of wealth. However, we also have to understand this sutta in the context of Buddha's teaching related to economic prosperity, success, and being rich in the Buddhist concept. In Buddhist teachings, we do not consider someone as rich just because that person has a lot of wealth. In the teachings of the Buddha, a person who is rich must be materially rich as well as spiritually rich. As I point out earlier session, last week or a week before perhaps, in Andha Sutta, the Buddha recognized three types of human being. One of them is blind. So this blind human being is compared to a human being who doesn't know how to achieve both material wealth and spiritual wealth. He simply wastes his time. Another human being has only one eye, so he is one-eyed man. So this human being has been compared by the Buddha to a human being who is very clever to achieve material wealth, Nevertheless, he doesn't have spiritual wealth. And the third human being is the one who has both eyesights. So Buddha compared this human being to a very successful human being who has both material and spiritual wealth. Then he encouraged all his followers to be the man with good eyesight, means with two eyes. In many discourses, Buddha emphasized the importance of achieving the material wealth in a righteous way without harming other living beings, without plundering this planet, without damaging our environment, in a peaceful way, working hard diligently, how one can achieve the wealth. And at the same time, he emphasized in these suttas that wealth should be achieved in a righteous way, at the same time spent in a meaningful way. So these teachings are found in numerous suttas. So when we analyze these suttas, we come to understand these two things. Buddha always emphasize both material and spiritual wealth for lay disciples. Like a bird needs two wings to fly, as a human being, as a lay follower of the Buddha, if you were to be successful and lead a decent human life, enjoying your sensual pleasures, then you need to have both material and spiritual wealth. Buddha never glorified being poor. Remember this. In Buddhism, poverty is not glorified. The Buddha recognized poverty is the root cause of crime breeding. So he instructed and urged rulers, kings, to develop the country. And he said, you must provide necessary conditions for the citizens to achieve economic prosperity. If not, there will be a lot of crimes, terrorism, and many other miseries and sufferings. So remember, in Buddhist teachings, we do not glorify the poverty. We encourage to achieve wealth, but only in a righteous way, legal way, not in illegal or unrighteous or harmful way. So I also would like to remind the Buddha's advice for the lay followers not to engage some of the businesses which are related to violence, crime, and those trades that Buddha discouraged, like dealing with weapons, dealing with poisons, bombs, and all these, and slaughtering and killing, and all these are not for the followers of the Buddha to make money. So, in this particular sutta, however, while Buddha recognized the material achievement as a great achievement, he emphasized the achieving spiritual wealth as something more superior. However, not only Ugga Sutta, in all the other discourses also, we can see the same trend. It means, while Buddha encouraged both material and spiritual wealth, and he placed the spiritual wealth in a higher position. So he considered achieving spiritual wealth is very essential, and it is supreme. But the question can be asked, why it is so? It is for some good reason. As the sutta itself points out, material wealth, no matter how good, no matter how rich you are, it has got these two weak points. material wealth cannot go beyond the death. Sooner or later, when we have to die, at that moment, whatever wealth that you have earned, either in a righteous way or harmful way, has to let go. So material wealth, including its name, fame, glory, power, and other aspects of the material success, cannot go beyond the death. This is one limitation of the material wealth. The other limitation is material wealth can be taken by others, by governments, by thieves, by any other person. The material wealth can be taken, or it can be lost by fire, flood, or natural disasters. So it can be lost. When it comes to spiritual wealth, however, these seven treasures the Buddha talks about in this sutta, we don't see these two limitations, and we can see their opposite. By contrast, spiritual wealth can go beyond the death. The reason is, spiritual wealth is not something outside, it is within oneself. It is not something material, but it is within your mind, your spiritual strength, spiritual faculties. So when you achieve these seven treasures, you are strengthening your spiritual faculties, your spiritual strength. And after the death, what goes from this life to next life is this material, this spiritual wealth, not the material wealth. And spiritual wealth cannot be stolen by anyone. For example, you have faith, moral conduct, and the other excellent virtuous qualities and skills and wisdom and the other related qualities. Those cannot be taken by force by anyone, or they cannot be stolen by anyone. They become yours. So spiritual wealth do not have the limitation which I just mentioned. Furthermore, in this cycle of existence, in the long journey of repeated birth and death, in the process of moving from life to life, these seven treasures, if you were to cultivate diligently, they will not only transform ourselves along the path towards enlightenment, furthermore, they will create necessary conditions for us to achieve material wealth again and again. So Buddha recognized spiritual wealth is not going to end itself, but that also can be the base for achieving the material wealth in this long journey of birth and death, because we recognize the karmic forces. And here we're specifically talking about positive, constructive, and wholesome karmic forces. So now at this very beginning, one of the government minister named Ugga comes to the Buddha and says about another person, Migara, who was in another area called Rohana. And he said Migara was so rich. And the Buddha asked, how rich is he? So he said, the Migara has got 100,000 gold coins. And of course, nothing to mention about the silver. So Buddha acknowledged here. He said, of course, I cannot deny he is rich. Then he pointed out the material wealth, even though he's rich, has got these weak points which is, can be taken away, it can be lost. However, if you were to have the spiritual wealth, which are 7 treasures, and that wealth cannot be taken away by anyone, and furthermore, they will bring a lot of benefits in this long journey. And what are these 7 treasures? First of them is Saddha, faith. Faith in the Triple Gems. However, this is not the blind faith. In the Buddha's teaching, blind faith is not encouraged. Faith here means the confidence, trust, serene, peaceful joy that arises in your mind when you see the Dhamma, when you reflect the noble qualities of the Buddha, when you reflect the noble qualities of the Dhamma and the qualities of the noble Sangha, in your mind, great faith, confidence arise, appreciation arise towards the Triple Gems. And this joy, appreciation, confidence will make you rooted in the Triple Gems. And as long as you have strong faith in the Triple Gems, then you are tend to follow the Triple Gems. So this is what we call the faith. It is a treasure. Any human being who has true confidence, true faith in the Triple Gems will never do evil, wicked, immoral actions. Thereby, he will be protected against falling to the lower realms. Any human being who has true faith in the Triple Gems will dedicate oneself to cultivate kusala, skillful actions which produce wholesome karmic forces. Thereby, that person is bound to be born in a favorable realm. Any human being who has the true faith in the Triple Gems and is strongly inclined to follow the Noble Eightfold Path, so he will develop his ethical, spiritual, and intellectual faculties so that he will develop himself within and move forward and upward on the path of the Buddha. And in this process, he will cultivate 5 spiritual faculties which eventually mature and help us to break through the illusion, ignorance. So in this way, when you have faith, it is a great treasure. Then second treasure is sila, morality. So you can see when you are deeply rooted in the faith of the Triple Gems, and you are bound to follow the righteous principles. You will uphold 5 righteous principles and other great, wonderful qualities. You will become a noble human being because by your behavior, by your speech, and with your thoughts, you will uphold sila, means higher moral conduct. So through your thoughts, words and actions, you will transform yourself to become a decent human being who live a noble human life. So this is a great treasure, sila. And connected with this sila, there are another 2 treasures. They're all related. One is moral shame, the other one is moral fear. Now, what is moral shame? The shame here can be twofold. One aspect of the shame is you feel shameful to do something evil, wicked, immoral because of the society. People in the society will look down you, will consider that you are very inferior a person. They will consider you as evil, wicked, immoral. They will consider you as someone who doesn't uphold higher qualities in life. So this is a kind of shame that can be imposed on you by the other people. So because of that shame, you might refrain from doing evil, wicked, immoral action. But this kind of shame is not so strong and is not highly praised. What Buddha truly praised is inner shame. You feel shame for yourself doing something bad. So if you feel shame to do anything evil, wicked, immoral, and you feel shame this is not worth doing because you have such high moral stand, this is what Buddha encouraged here. The reason is, a person who has only social, the person who has the moral shame because of the society, might do evil things when alone. But the person who has inner moral shame will not do anything evil even when he is alone and nobody will find out what he do. So that is why the Buddha encouraged here the moral shame. Moral shame is inner shame that you produce when you see the Dhamma, when you see how righteousness should be and how you should uphold these principles, then when you fail to do that, you feel shameful for yourself. The second one is, the fourth one is moral fear. Moral fear can be a few aspects. However, again, we highly appreciate the moral fear that one develops within oneself, because that kind of moral fear will prevent you doing anything evil, wicked, immoral. So let's see the few aspects of the moral fear. So someone might refrain doing evil actions because of having fear towards the law and order of the country. Because if you were to do such actions, the police will arrest you and you will be imprisoned. So because of that fear, you might refrain doing something evil. This is one aspect of it. Another aspect of it, you might refrain doing evil because the society will look down you, will think that you are very inferior, unwholesome type of human being. So because of fear towards the community, to the society, you might refrain doing something evil. Again, someone might refrain doing evil because you have fear that the karmic force that you produce through these unwholesome actions will, in time to come, produce negative consequences. So because of fear towards the karma, you might refrain from evil. So there are these three aspects to it. Among these three aspects, a person who has only fear towards the law and order might do evil when he is able to do something evil in secret, that as long as police cannot arrest him, as long as police cannot find it, he might do evil action. A person who has the moral fear only towards the society might do evil actions when he or she knows that that particular action will not be discovered by the other people. A person who has the fear towards the karmic forces, negative karmic forces, will refrain from the evil actions both in public and private. So here the moral fear is specifically related to the karmic force. However, I must emphasize something. When Buddha says that refrain doing evil, wicked, immoral actions, of course, the one of the strongest reason for that is the karmic force, and it also includes the legal and social aspect which we just discussed. But top of all these things, Buddha emphasize one more excellent thing. That is out of compassion. He says, Sabbe tasanti dandasse, sabbe bahayanti macchuno. All the living beings, they have fear towards the death. They have fear towards the punishment. They do not like to be tortured. They do not like to be punished. Attanang upamankata, take yourself for granted. Put yourself into the shoes of the others. Empathize with the others, how the other people feel. Nahaneya nagataye. So having compare yourself with other living creatures, you should refrain doing evil, wicked, immoral actions. So this is what Buddha emphasized. So here Buddha emphasized compassion. Okay, so we have faith, moral conduct, moral shame, moral fear, and the fifth one is learning. Here specifically, the learning the Dhamma. Of course, the other knowledges related to mundane subjects are also very important. When someone has the knowledge about various languages, various skills, various subjects, they are greatly helpful for you to achieve material wealth. So Buddha considered it as a blessing. So Bahu Satchancha Sippancha in Mangala Sutta, Buddha says to have knowledge and skills in various mundane subjects definitely bring you wealth. It's a blessing. However, here when the Buddha talks about learning, on top of it, he emphasizes Dhamma learning. What is the difference between the Dhamma and many other subjects is Dhamma will lead you to enlightenment. Dhamma is specifically designed to awaken you from the deep sleep of ignorance. No other subjects can do it. As far as awakening is concerned, it is only the Buddha's teaching. We are referring to awakening from the sleep of ignorance and destroying all the defilements. So there's no any other teachings compared to the Dhamma in this particular aspect. So Buddha emphasizes here learning the Dhamma. So when you learn the Dhamma, you will have broader understanding about the life and its nature, and you will become compassionate human being, wiser human being. And with this, the sixth treasure is the generosity. When you learn the Dhamma and uphold the righteous principles and have faith, and eventually you will become a human being who has compassion for the other living beings. Such a human being will not become self-centered. He will not become narrow-minded. So instead of self-centered, he will think for others. So he will try to do whatever he can do to relieve suffering from other living beings. This attitude that he will have is expressed as generosity here. So he will be generous with his time. He will be generous with his wealth. He will be generous with his knowledge. He will be generous with whatever he can be, as long as other human beings, other living beings will be benefited, he is ready to spend his time, wealth, or whatever he can for the well-being and happiness of the others. This is what it called generosity. So generosity should not be confined only to wealth, only to money, only to material things, but immaterial things are also included here. So this is the sixth treasure. The seventh one is the wisdom. Wisdom is born through Dhamma understanding and Dhamma practice. Wisdom does not mean mundane knowledge. Wisdom here means direct seeing the impermanent nature. Everything in this universe is interconnected, interdependent. There's nothing absolute. Everything is changing, fleeting. So life should be understood as a waveform. Even though these buildings, these solid things were to appear as unchanging, solid, permanent, everlasting, all these are forces and energies. They are vibrant, they are changing. So a wise disciple of the Buddha, when he or she understands one's own body and mind, which is combination of five groups of forces, are in a constant flux, when he or she understands whatever light, sound, smell, touch sensation, and any other sense stimulus come through the five sense faculties, and whatever the fabrications, processing going through the mind, all these are as condition, subject to change and disappear, and impermanent and fleeting, as such a human being will develop detached discernment. This is what we call here wisdom. It means true understanding of things. Yatha bhutang jnana dasanam, seeing things as they are. So this is detached discernment, a kind of wisdom which will release you from all the bonds of suffering and miseries. So Buddha says any man or woman who has these seven treasures will be considered as a rich person. When a woman or man has these kinds of wealth, they are really rich in the world. So here, invincible among gods and humans means when you have these seven treasures, you are rich in this world itself, and also you will be rich among the gods and human beings in this cycle of existence. When you are reborn, you will still have these seven treasures with you, and you will create necessary conditions even to achieve material wealth. So, because of that, the wise disciples of the Buddha is encouraged to cultivate these seven treasures.